Well, I'm glad Bill made it through that. He swallowed a frog right before we started today. And I wasn't sure whether he would be leading singing or not, but he did his usual wonderful job. I tell you, you have no idea how blessed you are to live in Michigan. No idea. We had a lectureship in Tequincy, Louisiana, and we got down there, and I got up on Friday morning to go set up, and I looked at the thermometer as I stepped out the front door at 7 o'clock in the morning. It was 101 degrees. By the time I had walked, we were staying about three or four doors from the church building. By the time I had walked three or four doors down, I was just drenched with sweat. The humidity was 90-something percent. And, you know, I don't know how people live in that kind of climate. I just don't know. We were at people's houses talking about mold. They were talking about the 14-inch flying cockroaches. I'll take Michigan, thank you. I'll take Michigan anytime. I think it's also interesting to see the problems that exist in other congregations. It's always good for me to travel and to see things that other people are struggling with and to see the issues. I spent an hour one day with a lady who was convinced that her house was haunted. A Christian who is having all kinds of paranormal activity, and about half of those things I could relate to the weather. She had pictures of the ghosts. Well, it was steam on her lens of her camera, because if you walk from air conditioning outside with the camera down there, the lens is covered with droplets of water. Can you imagine living in those conditions? Well, we're talking this morning about something that was in that song. Live for Jesus, O my brother, his disciple ever be. Render not to any other what alone the Lord's should be. You know, there's a famous Austrian composer, and Carl could probably give you a four-hour lecture on this guy. His name was Franz Schubert. What's interesting about him is that his perhaps most famous work, his most famous symphony, is called the Unfinished Symphony. I wonder if you have considered your life to be a symphony. You know, it's interesting to realize that God views it that way. We have a message to convey. We have a life to live. And one of the things that is about, oh, live for Jesus, my brother, his disciple will ever be, is that we are conducting our symphony in a way that is different. And my challenge to you this morning is your symphony unfinished? Now, you know, you say, well, yeah, I'm still alive. Yeah, you're still playing your symphony. That's true. But listen to the words of Paul, and I want to emphasize that we may assume this was when he was about to die, but this passage is 2 Timothy 4, beginning with verse 6, and that's a long, long, long time before Paul died. And yet he says, "For I am now ready to be offered." Are you ready? If you knew you were going to die in 20 minutes, are you ready? You know, we all seem to think we're going to live forever. We all seem to think, well, that applies to Audrey. That doesn't apply to me. No, Paul is relatively young here. I am now ready to be offered. The time of my departure is at hand. We can leave any time. And then he talks about how he has conducted his life. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Is that your life? How is your symphony being played? He finishes that by saying, "Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me in that day. And not to me only, but to all of them who love his appearance." Live for Jesus in life's morning, at the noontide hour be His, and at eve when day is turning, and inherit endless bliss. That's the song you just sang. Your symphony. Let me suggest to you that there's some things you and I need to think about how we're conducting our symphony of life. One of those things I'd like to encourage you to realize is that sometimes we have a problem because we didn't count the cost. And once we get into the symphony, sometimes we don't want to pay the cost. Jesus spoke to that. Listen to Luke 14, beginning with verse 27. For whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. We just sang, live for Jesus, O my brother, his disciple ever be. Jesus says, if you aren't willing to bear your cross, you can't be my disciple. And then he gives a common sense thing. For which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and calculate the cost to see if he has enough cash to finish it? Otherwise, when he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone will mock him, saying, this fool began to build but was not able to finish it. How are you running your life? Did you figure the cost of being a Christian? If you were arrested, would there be enough evidence to convict you? That's an old saying, isn't it? A lot of truth in it. You know, becoming a Christian means there's some things going to happen to you. There's going to be some cost factors. For one thing, you're going to have opposition. I guess some of us have experienced that more than others. My father, in a fit of anger, when I became a Christian, said to me, if you become a Christian, you're not my son anymore. Opposition. He changed. When he realized it wasn't going to stop me. Some of you have had a husband or a wife that has opposed your being a Christian. And that cost, that opposition has been tough. I know that. I don't know how you managed to survive that constant picking at you, at your spirituality. There are several sitting among us here who knew that all too well. When you read about Nehemiah back in the Old Testament, you see Nehemiah was determined to build and to rebuild the place of God, and he had trouble. People around him in Nehemiah 2, beginning with verse 17, he says, they laughed us to scorn and despised us. There are people going to despise you because you're a Christian. There are people going to laugh at you. They're going to make fun of you. I think that's a major deterrent for young people today, because they know the peer pressure is going to come. And that's a price to pay. That's difficult. Paul had tremendous opposition. Let me tell you something, folks. You get involved in something that changes the world, you're going to have opposition. I've had opposition my entire life. I've been in this ministry that you've heard about off and on for 45 years. I've had a lot of opposition. I've had people in the church who have opposed me. Paul had that problem. In Acts 20, beginning with verse 22, Paul mentions all that had happened to him from the people he was trying to help, from the people that should have been the number one people to support him, the Jewish people of his time. And he talks about the fact that when he was in Thessalonica, this is Acts 17, beginning with verse 5, that Paul had to leave by night to get away from the threat of the people he was trying to help. He talks about Berea in Acts 17, beginning with verse 13, that he had to escape by way of the ocean. And then he went to Athens in Acts 17, beginning with verse 32. And he's talking to the intellectual. And the intellectuals opposed him. There are people that are going to oppose us intellectually. I don't know whether you had the experience I did when I worked the fare booth, but I had a couple of guys that came by and they wanted to laugh at the proposal that there was design in the creation, that there was intelligence and purpose in the creation. It was a wonderful exchange, actually. But the one kid said to me, I'm a graduate student. I said, that's interesting. I might be your teacher. What class are you taking? And he didn't want to hear that. But I think it's important to understand that we can expect opposition from family, from friends, from associates. Live for Jesus, oh my brother, oh my sister, His disciple ever be. Don't let that deter you from doing what is right. Don't let that deter you from being the kind of person that God calls you to be. I know it's hard. I know opposition comes. But understand that the Bible is full of people that faced opposition. You're also going to run into a conflict of interest. In 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10, Paul says, in tears, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. Jesus said, you cannot serve both God and money. Luke 16, verse 13, and Matthew 6 and verse 24. You cannot serve, notice, serve. The word there means be a slave to. You cannot be controlled by both God and money. Let me tell you, share something personal with you. This has been such an incredible blessing to me. I hope that maybe it will encourage you. I've been doing these lectures for about 4 or 5 years. And I had learned how to present stuff. Not from college, from the School of Hard Knocks. I think I've told you the story. When I was in college, they told me, don't you ever try to speak publicly. You'll never be able to do it. And you say, well, they were right. All right, I'm not going there. But I think it's interesting that at least some people thought I had developed an ability to convey information. So I had a guy come to me, and he said to me, this was in Texas, and he said to me, I'd like to hire you to be a business broker. I said, what does that mean? He said, I want you to come and take pictures and make presentations like you do on this business thing I have, and you can present these things, and people will buy the businesses, and you'll get a cut of the percent of the value of the business. I said, that doesn't sound like much money. He said, oh, he said, listen, he said, I've got one right now that I think you can undoubtedly sell within a month because I've got people asking about it, and it's going to go for $10 million. Do you know what 1% of $10 million is? And when I sat down and figured it out, it was 4 times as much as I would make as a teacher that year because I was making $5,200 that year as a teacher. And I went back to Phyllis and I said, do you know what I was just offered? Do you understand how much money we could have if I did this, if I quit teaching, if I quit this church stuff and devoted myself to this business brokerage? And she looked me right straight in the eye and she said, you're going to be a disciple of Jesus, you're going to be a disciple of money. You've heard me talk about the strength that woman had. Cindy has that kind of strength. I don't know how I've been so blessed to have 2 women who have that kind of strength because I don't have that kind of strength. About that time, there was another song out. You remember the song, The Cat and the Fiddle by Harry Chapin? It's a song about a man who was on business all the time and he didn't have time for his kid and he kept saying, I can't do it now, son, but when I do it, I'll come back and we'll do it then and we'll have a great time. And the song ends with the boy being just like his father. When the father wants to talk to him, the son says, well, Dad, the kids are sick and I got a new job. But we'll have fun later on, Dad. The Cat and the Fiddle, Harry Chapin. I had to decide, was I going to have a family? Was I going to be a Christian? Was I going to be a disciple of Jesus? Or was I going to be rich? Because I'd have been rich. I'd have made money. There's no question about that in my mind. Of course, about 2 years later, there was a major depression. And there were lots of businesses for sale, but nobody was buying, and I probably would have lost my shirt. But that's not my motivation. My motivation was to understand the importance of a conflict of interest. We have to decide what's worth what in your life. Is your family worth something to you? Is being a disciple worth something to you? Do you have a conflict of interest? Let me tell you something some of you may not know. About the 3rd year I was here, we had a guy that came out of prison. And he wanted to be a Christian, and we baptized him into Christ. Young man, good-looking guy. This is right here, to watch it. The only problem was that he had a bad past. And we're going to minister him. We're going to straighten him out. We're going to help him overcome. And some of you may remember that all of a sudden he quit coming. He'd been here for a month or so, maybe 6 weeks. I had great hopes for this young man. He quit coming. We found out later he was working in a nightclub as a bartender and a stripper. See, there was a conflict of interest. We have to decide, what is our primary interest in life? I hope the young lady sitting in the back row will think about this when they decide what they're going to do with their lives. Because you can choose to serve mammon, but Jesus says you can't serve money and God. Don't make money your primary priority. Talk about Jesus and His work. Talk about family, the importance of people. Another reason we have problems with counting the cost is that we haven't realized that we can get too many irons in the fire. And boy, we'll talk about the kettle calling the pot black here. I'm not the one to be saying this. Cindy will tell you, I got too many irons in the fire. In Exodus 18, Moses was trying to do everything. And his father-in-law Jethro comes to him and he says, "Now look, Moses, you can't be the judge of all these people. You can't do this. It's physically impossible for you to settle every problem that these people can come up with." Moses had to appoint people to do it, to help. I want to tell you something. Richard can't do it all. Bill can't do it all. Carl can't do it all. Bill can't do it all. We cannot have one individual doing too much here. There's a need for us to do what Ephesians 4 verse 11 talks about us doing. Because Ephesians 4 verse 11 talks about the vine and the branches and the fact that each one of us is called to a different job. My plea to you is do what you're called to do. Let's not have murder in the church here, folks. You know what that is? That's when you find a willing worker in the church and you ride him until he drops. I'm worried about Richard. He's doing too much. He's out there riding the tractor. He's in organizing the Bible school program. He's teaching the class. He's making contacts. He's doing visitation. Too many irons in the fire, folks. We can't do it. We've got to spread this out. Too many irons in the fire can help us not be what God wants us to be. And weariness. Do you ever wonder why 2 Thessalonians 3 verse 13 says, "Do not be weary in well-doing"? Because you see, when you get involved in a work, it's easy to start it, it's hard to continue it. It's easy for us to give up on the food bank. It's easy for us to say, "Well, this is getting to be a drag now. We're having, although Patty's been doing 99% of it, but we're running over and getting all this food. It's hard to meet people at the building. We just need to give that up." That's what Satan wants, folks. That's what Satan wants. We need to count the cost of being a church, being a servant in this community. We can't give up on the food bank. We can't give up on the Fair Project. We can't give up on reaching out to this community. What we need to do is to keep thinking about ways to serve. A couple of weeks ago, Bill and I had an idea. It may not be a good one. Do you know what we could do over there? Instead of Richard having to mow that big field, we could plow that thing up and say to the community, "Here, why don't you come out here and plant a garden? All you kids in the community, why don't you come out and have a garden out in our lot here? We'll plow it for you. We'll keep it watered. Why don't you come out here and do that?" There's an idea. There's a way to get us into the community. There's a way for us to do something a little bit different. We might think about the possibility of saying to people in the community, "Yeah, we give away coats in the fall. And if you don't have a coat, you get in touch with us. But if you don't have paper and pencil, we'll help you there too. Maybe we should think a little bit about school supplies." I mean, I'm just saying, we cannot be weary in well-doing. And we can't say, "Well, we're doing this and we're doing that. That's enough." No, it isn't enough. It's never enough. We need to keep thinking of ways to serve. And you say, "Well, we're going to run out of money." I hope so. I hope so. I don't want us to be sitting on a big pot of gold here. We need to be sure that we're using all the resources God has given us. Paul said, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Philippians 4 and verse 13. It doesn't depend upon us, folks. What depends upon us is us getting out of God's way. We need to count the cost of being a church. To count the cost of being people who serve this community. We cannot be people who are satisfied to stay where we are. That's deadness. And we will die if we allow that to happen. Our symphony needs to be played continuously. We cannot leave it unfinished. It doesn't depend upon our strength. It can even be loneliness that we don't count the cost of. Do you ever feel like you're by yourself when you're fighting Satan? I remember when I was teaching school, you know, I was the only person in our lunch group that believed that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of God, and we need to do something about it. Everybody's off on every other kind of tangent. I got feeling kind of lonely. It was kind of an isolation. Some of you work in environments where nobody there knows anything except dirty jokes and foul language. It's important for us to understand that Jesus says, I will never leave you or forsake you. We cannot be lonely. That's Hebrews 13 and 5. And we are never alone. Listen to Paul. This is 2 Timothy again, this time chapter 4, verse 7. I have fought a good fight. At my first answer, no man stood with me, but all men forsook me. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. And the Lord delivered me from every evil work and will preserve me until His heavenly kingdom. Do you understand what that's saying? You stand up for Jesus, He's going to stand with you. How long? Until His heavenly kingdom. Until your symphony is finished. When Paul made that statement, we started out the diet in this morning in 2 Timothy 4, verse 6, when I am ready to be offered the time of my departure, and I have fought a good fight, he's talking about the condition of life. We need to understand we're never by ourselves. You know, Elijah had that problem. Elijah, he comes to God in 1 Kings 19:14, and he says, God, I'm the only one left. I'm the only one left. There isn't anybody else doing what I'm doing. God, I'm all by myself. I'm lonely. I'm terrified. He says, I just can't handle it anymore. God, I'm all by myself. And God's response to him is, hey, Elijah, I have 7,000 people who have not bowed their knee to Baal. You're not by yourself. We're not alone. We're never alone. Not only because God is with us, but there are tons of brothers and sisters out there that are doing wonderful things. God's people have always worked to finish their job. Israel and Moses finished the tabernacle. The Bible specifically makes a point of saying the work was finished. Exodus 39, verse 22. I'm sorry, 32. Exodus 39, 32, and Exodus 40 and verse 33. It says it twice. When Solomon was building the temple, the Bible says in 1 Kings 6 and verse 38, Solomon completed the building of the temple. How long did that take, folks? Read 6:38. 7 years. 7 years. God works in wonderful ways, but He doesn't always work at our speed. And do you remember Jesus Christ? Jesus used the word finish a couple of times as He went through the crucifixion. In John 17 and verse 4, Jesus says in His prayer to God, I have finished the work You gave Me to do. Some of you remember my story of when God sent Cynthia to me. I sat in the lawn chair out there behind the house. I said, Lord, I'm done. I finished my work. I'm done. My kids are gone. They're self-sufficient. I'm done with that. I'm done with my ministry. We've gotten everything done that needs to be done. It's all out there. It's on DVD. Got a couple of books written. It's all done, Father. Let me go. I'm tired. I want to get out of here. And God said, hey, I got a word for you. That's stupid. That's dumb. Make God laugh. Tell Him your plans. God said, you're not finished. You're not finished. Don't ever say you're finished until you get to that final end when Jesus Christ is hanging on the cross. In John 19 and verse 33, I'm sorry, verse 30. John 19, verse 30. The last thing Jesus said, it is finished. Read John 19, 30. When you die, If you have conscious awareness, are you going to be able to say, it's finished? But you can't do that right now, folks. You're not dead. You're not finished. Genesis 2, verses 1 and 2, the Bible says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and the host of them. God says, when you're finished, not you. Philippians 1, verse 6, God has begun a good work in you. I'm saying that to every person in this room this morning. God has begun a good work with you. That's true. Larry, that's true. Lena, that's true. Sam, that's true. Peggy, that's true. Willard, that's true. God has begun a good work in you. Well, how long is He going to keep that going? And will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. And will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. You know what the difference is in us? We are sentient beings. That means we choose whether we will let God finish our work or not. We will choose. You know, people in the world might have thought about my situation out in that chair and said, well, you need to go in and get the gun and shoot your head off. Then you'd know you're done. No, I'm a sentient being. When I'm saying to God, I'm finished, I'm giving God my opinion, which I know isn't worth much. And God says, no, I got a better plan. You need to say to God, if you got a plan for me, lead me to it, show it to me. Why did Schubert not finish his symphony? Let me tell you what he said. He said, yeah, I was doing this great symphony and I had great plans for it, and I lost interest. He lost interest. It was perhaps the greatest work in his life. How could he lose interest? Well, he didn't realize it was the greatest work in his life. He had no frame of reference to measure that against. Modern critics, and Carl can tell you all about this, modern critics can look at that symphony and they can tell you why it was his greatest work. But he lost interest. And you know, the symphony of your life is exactly the same way. It's the greatest thing you will ever do. You may accomplish wonderful things in your business. You may do marvelous works of a material nature. You may have great gifts in medicine or in construction or auto repair or whatever. But that isn't your greatest work. Your greatest work is what you do as a Christian. Your greatest work is whether you in fact do what this song says. Live for Jesus, O my brother, His disciple ever be. Render not to any other what alone the Lord's should be. Understand that you choose whether you will complete your symphony or not, and whether you will be able at any point in your life to say, I am now ready to be offered, the time of my departure is at hand, because you don't know when that will happen. But you do know whether you are working on the ministry, on the mission that God has given to you. I'd like to call your attention to the difference between Paul and Judas. Paul had a mission, so did Judas. Both of those missions were tied up with Jesus Christ. Judas had the capacity to be a great disciple. He was chosen by Jesus. And you can argue about what Jesus knew about Judas when he selected him. But the fact of the matter was that Judas had the choice. Judas didn't have to betray Christ. He chose to betray Christ. He chose to hang himself. He chose the end that Satan wanted for him, and Satan finished him. Will Satan finish you? Don't let that happen. I didn't ask Bill to sing Live for Jesus. He chose that song today. But I'm telling you, he couldn't have picked a song that would have fitted what I was wanting to say this morning any better. Live for Jesus, wandering sinner. Under Satan, serve no more. Don't let Satan finish your life. I often promise prize is a winner. that thou may be when their life is over. Live for Jesus. Live for Jesus. Bring Him all you have to give. On the cross, the world's Redeemer gave His life that thou mightst live. Schubert didn't finish his symphony because he lost interest. Have you lost interest in the church, in Jesus, in the purpose He has for your life? Don't let that happen. Let God finish your life. And if you need our prayers, if you need to become a Christian, if your life is not the symphony God wants it to be, we beg you, live for Jesus, His disciple ever be. As we stand and sing to encourage you, won't you please come?